Hey, this is Ed. So this is a podcast, is that right?
This is.
Okay. We're officially podcasting right now. That's awesome.
This is Straight from the Cutter's Mouth.
Welcome to Straight from the Cutter's Mouth, a retina podcast. At least once a week, we aim to bring you insights and perspectives from the world of vitreoretinal surgery. I am your host, Dr. Jay Schreather. Today on episode 154, we feature a listener-inspired episode where we discuss the concept of combined cataract extraction and vitrectomy, or phacovitrectomy. Drs. Ajay Kurian and Dr. David Eamon join me for this discussion. A list of financial disclosures are attached to this episode in the episode description. Straight from the Cutter's Mouth is now happy to be joined by two retina specialists. First, in alphabetic order, his first appearance on the show, Dr. David Eamon from Retina Consultants of Alberta, where he's an associate. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jay. It's an honor.
And last but not least, podcast MVP, Knicks fan extraordinaire, Ajay Kurian from University of Rochester.
Thanks for having me back, Jay.
So this was an episode that multiple listeners requested. Dave actually chimed in at some point saying he wanted to hear about it too. But we have, over the last maybe year, I've had a lot of people ask for this topic. And it's a difficult topic to approach because there's some literature, there's also some real world stuff. So this is the topic of vitrectomy versus phacovitrectomy, combined surgery with cataract surgery and vitrectomy at the same time. And so what we did to prepare for this is we pulled a couple of papers. There isn't that much literature on phacovitrectomy, but there's a couple of papers we're going to use to discuss. We're also going to talk about our experiences. Dave is up in Canada, where he does a lot more phacovitrectomy than Ajay and I do, though we do some in academic medicine. We're talking about some of the challenges for why phacovitrectomy is not done in the U.S., but also some of the real world, if you are going to do it, how you approach it. So let's just start, guys. I'm going to just reference these papers. You know, the first paper I just want to reference, there was a paper in Retina in 2015 by Yannick Lederman et al. From Chicago. And they did, just looking at, for example, doing a vitrectomy with cataract surgery, right? And they were just looking at, does it matter the type of lens you put in? So Dave, first of all, let's talk about vitrectomy in your hand. So what sort of indications do you consider doing combined cataract surgery? Is it restricted to macular work? Is it restricted to diabetics? Or do you do it basically in any scenario in any setting?
Great question, Jay. Typically in Canada, because there's limited access and wait times for cataracts can exceed, 6 months. Typically, most retinal surgeons will do combined phacovitrectomies. And it comes down to basically anyone, typically over 50, who's phakic and needs any type of retinal procedure, whether it's pucker, hole, RD. And in terms of, how you go about setting that up, I mean, we do live and practice in refractive cataract era. So certainly you have to pay attention to astigmatism. And, fortunately now with the, technologies such as ILM Master 700, it can make that pretty easy to determine. Also, a lot of our patients are coming in now and they've had prior refractive surgery. So that's something that's also picked up with new biometry devices. So those are sort of things you want to keep in mind when it comes down to MAC off RDs, when you're booking a case for a phacovit for that. You want to pay particular attention to the A scan and make sure you order that so you don't get an erroneously short axial length and result in an overcorrection. So they're typically some of the things that we look at, just requiring a little more chair time.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Ajay, one of the challenges we have in the U.S., I mean, the most common thing I've heard about this is, and I think it's a real thing, is referral patterns can make this challenging. I think that if you're out in practice, it's just, it's maybe difficult to maintain referrals, especially given that certain areas can be very saturated and be difficult to do cataract surgery. But if we're talking from a pure medical standpoint, I think some of the things that are challenging, Dave, let's say it's like a retinal detachment. Because this is how this conversation started between us, where you were talking about doing a phacovitrectomy, for example, versus doing a buccal vitrectomy. How do you handle your IOL calcs in the setting of an RD if it's MAC off or MAC threatening, or you don't have good visualization of the fovea for your IOL calcs?
So you get an A scan.
So you just rely on the A scan and then a comparison to the fellow eye?
Correct. Yeah. And also look at their manifest refraction to make sure it all makes sense.
Now, let's go to this paper. And Ajay, I'm going to let you chime in. So this paper was just about, if you're going to do it, what kind of lens do you put in? Because I think there's different thoughts on whether you put a three-piece IOL or a single-piece IOL. Ajay, what they found is there really was no difference in complications or, risks with doing a single piece acrylic versus multi-piece, three-piece lenses. Do you typically, when you do phacovits, for example, we talked about doing in diabetic surgery before, do you use a one-piece or three-piece lens?
I usually use a one-piece whenever possible. As long as there's no complications with the bag, I prefer using a one-piece.
Dave, how about you? Is that true for you as well?
Same for me. Simply due to ease. I find it's a lot easier to put them in than the ME60.
So I'm going to be devil's advocate and talk about, again, reasons people say maybe it's not a good idea. And then we're going to answer those kind of questions, right? So the first question is, people say, well, refractive outcomes. Well, you maybe addressed that maybe you have to be more meticulous about taking into account their LASIK, things like that. I think one of the biggest things, which has changed over time, is maybe the older generation of surgeons wasn't trained in phaco emulsification the same way the younger generations of surgeons was, that's lessened over time. But another question is, again, and Ajay and I have talked about this before, like there's other risks. So if you have phaco vitrectomy, for example, in a complex case, what if the cornea starts going to go south? You know, what if the bag breaks? How often do you encounter issues like this in your practice or your colleagues' practice?
So in my case, I've been fortunate so far with regards to that, but that's certainly reasonable. Timing, these are typically a little longer cases. I mean, doing a combo maybe adds, 10, 15 minutes to the case. And also keeping in mind, most of these cataracts, they're not super dense. I mean, sometimes they are, but for the most part, they're mild to moderate lenses, so they don't take a lot of energy to get out. But using just back to the basics, the shell technique, so putting some viscoat in followed by some Helon, you can really protect the endothelium if you're thinking that the phaco energy might be higher, and then obviously keeping that OcuCoat or something on the epithelium to preserve your view, so that when you come down to peeling later, that you're not sweating. Mm-hmm. Because your view is deteriorating. Yeah.
Ajay, one of the things, since we both staff fellows, and Dave, you staff fellows as well, one of the things I do, depending on the fellow, sometimes I actually do the phaco myself and then pass more of the vitrectomy, because I'm almost like, we need to get past that point. And for example, maybe I've done phacos more recently than them. Maybe this is something that we just need to get through this with, again, cornea intact and with an intact bag. What are your kind of approaches, Ajay, when you do these?
So I think, especially if the lens is relatively soft, I definitely prefer doing a phaco over a lensectomy through a partial plano approach. If the lens is pretty dense, I do get concerned about the cornea starting to degrade over the surgery. And so that's usually in the setting of a complex RD where the patient might have had oil or something like that that caused the lens to be really, really dense by the time I'm operating. And so those are the situations when I would think about doing a partial plano lensectomy instead of a regular phaco, just try to keep the cornea as clear as possible. I actually tend to do the same thing you do with the fellows or trainee for the combined cases. I usually tend to do the phaco myself in those cases as well.
So Ajay, and we're going to just segue and come back. You referenced partial plano lensectomy. Dave, are there situations where you prefer a lensectomy over a phaco?
Well, first off, just two more things I wanted to add about that view.
Sure.
Rolling the cornea, rolling the epithelium with the wet Q-tip can help detergest some of those swollen cells. And then in the most, severe of cases, in those really long cases, sometimes you have to do a superficial debridement or a keratectomy, to get the job done. But with regards to a partial plano lensectomy, I typically will only do those if it's, for example, an IOFB case.
Mm-hmm.
Or a secondary RD repair in a post-ruptured globe where there's already a really compromised capsule and or lens. I typically will not do those outside of those two indications.
The other indication I'll add on top of the ones you said, I think if there's, and people have talked about this for PVR, if there's any signs of anterior PVR inflammation, you're starting to get synechiae, the posterior capsule starting to pacify, and you're concerned about anterior PVR cyclic membrane, I think that's a reasonable thing to think about, taking the lens and taking the whole capsule as well. I think it's just a hard decision, because once you do that, you've lost your capsular support forever. But I think we've all seen, unfortunately, cases where you've left the capsule and you've regretted it because it's caused issues down the line. It's much harder to remove it later once it fibrosis or scars. I don't know what you feel about that, Ajay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Additionally, one of the things that I found that's helpful for keeping the cornea clear is to use viscoat. I feel like that actually also contributes to keeping the cornea clear during some of those longer cases.
You're talking about on the surface.
On the surface, yeah.
On the epithelium surface. Referencing safety.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, there's a study by Feigenbaum et al. From Retina in 2018. It was entitled Intraoperative and Postoperative Complications in Phaco Vitrectomy for ERM and Macular Hole. They did an audit of 1,000 eyes, and basically they found it was very safe in phakic patients, regardless of whether it was the fellows or the attendings doing it. And obviously it was more cost and resource efficient. That's something that's been shown in other studies, the cost effectiveness of it. And then, you know, here's another devil's advocate question. So why not stage? So there's obviously economic reasons and logistical reasons in Canada for not staging and doing it at the same time. But Ajay, what about staging versus not staging? Do you feel strongly one way or the other?
I think it's a little bit different here with our referral patterns, like you were talking about before, in terms of a lot of times these patients are coming to me for an evaluation to determine whether I would recommend to do the macular surgery before or after the cataract surgery. And so it's almost as though the plan is either coordinate with the surgeon to do a combined case or either do the macular case before or after. A lot of times I tend to lean towards having the cataract done first for an epiretinal membrane. And I just find that for epiretinal membranes, it's sometimes really hard to predict what the actual visual acuity is going to be like just based on the OCT. I see a lot of variation in that, and also just what the patient's happiness is going to be like with their vision after cataract surgery. And so a significant number of patients with an epiretinal membrane that might look really bad on the OCT end up getting cataract surgery first, and they actually tend to be happy and not wanting to move forward with that with the epiretinal membrane surgery. I haven't really encountered anybody with a macular hole and a significant cataract that would actually affect my view. So I'm usually doing the macular hole first in those cases and then the cataract surgery after that.
Dave, I mean, I'm going to just mention some things about staging as well and maybe reasons not to stage. I think, Ajay, one of the harder things is economically, the patients, even in the U.S., may prefer not to stage, even though we're talking about medical things, if they have a copayment versus a deductible or work, taking work off can be an economic strain, so they just want to get it all done at once. But, Dave, you referenced a little bit in Canada the cost issue. Is staging something that's viable, or is it sometimes difficult to get that staged in an expedient fashion?
I mean, staging is still doable. So, I mean, at Wills, I mean, you know, we didn't do a lot of combined surgeries at all. We did very few phaco. So when I started out my first 3 months for my holes and ERMs, I was doing straight vits. And, you know, the patient's happy for a short period of time, but then all of a sudden they have a cataract and you make that referral on to a cataract surgeon. And then, you know, it can be, like I said, 6 months later. So you quickly realize that you're not really benefiting the patient. So certainly staged cases can be done. It's more so a same day procedure where a cataract surgeon will come in, do the case, and then I would proceed and do my case. And that's typically on a referral basis. So if a cataract surgeon refers me a patient with an epiretinal membrane or a macular hole, then we would typically arrange that combined the same day.
Now, my other question is, and I'm going to reference a paper, and this will go into a little bit of the post-op care we'll talk about. There's this paper from Retina in 2017 by Tosi et al. It was complex retinal detachment in phakic patients, and they did pre-vitrectomy phaco versus combined phaco, and they split them into two groups, whether they staged it 7 days before vit, 29 patients, or 30 patients did combined surgery. And these were patients who already had a complex RD. And they looked at differences in inflammation and outcomes and any difference re-detachment rate. And basically, there were no differences except that the patients who had staged surgery had less posterior synechiae than the patients who had, same day and combined surgery, and everything else was basically the same. So it seems like staging versus not staging doesn't seem to make a huge difference. We'll get back to the posterior synechiae issue in a minute. Dave, what do you do? Again, we'll talk about the cataract part of the procedure. What do you do if the bag breaks? I know you haven't encountered, but what would you do? So again, if it's a macular case where you're not using tamponade, maybe not such a big deal. But let's say it's an RD or a case where you're going to use tamponade. Would you put a secondary IOL? Would you plant a stage? Would you be concerned about displacement of the IOL? What would be your approach?
So if it's an RD case and I break bag, I would probably, you know, I would convert to, you know, a PPL. So I'd remove all the lens, but I would keep, you know, hopefully I would have gotten at least a good anti-orexis, and I would leave them aphakic. And then I would come back on another day to hopefully just slip a sulcus lens in if the capsular support was sufficient. And if not, then I would, you know, suture in an aqueous lens.
Ajay, how about you?
So if the sulcus is viable, I would probably put in a sulcus lens at that time. I haven't really sutured an IOL in a case with an RD. Maybe if it was something like an ERM or a MAC or even a MAC hole, I might think about doing a fixated IOL. But for the RD, I probably would just wait until the post-operative period is over and make sure that everything is good with the retina before doing a fixated IOL for those cases.
Yeah, I think it's hard. I mean, I think I've done, for example, retained lens material cases. We've done these. I remember doing some in fellowship where you know, you find a break and they've already put like a sulcus lens in. I've been disappointed sometimes if the patient doesn't position even with air. You can end up with displacement or tilt of that IOL if the optic ends up above the iris or a haptic pops out, even with you know using myostat or myocol. But it is something to consider. Now, let's say everything goes smoothly. I'm assuming you suture your wound before you go to a retractomy, Dave, just to maintain good closure.
Yes, always, yeah.
And then the question is, so let's say you do your vitrectomy and you do everything. What do you routinely suture your sclerotomies in combined cases? Do you not? And do you leave the suture in the corneal wound either one way or the other? Or do you take it out?
Yeah, great question. I'm always going to leave a buried 10-0 vicryl suture in my cataract wound. In terms of suturing the sclerotomies, for an ERM, I'll leave air and I will not suture. For a MAC hole, I'll typically leave SF6 and I will not suture. But for all RDs, I'll suture all three sclerotomies.
Ajay, how about you? Do you change anything in terms of your sclerotomy suturing? And do you also leave the 10-0 nylon suture in if you did a combined phaco vit?
I do leave the 10-0 nylon suture in. I don't really change anything with the sclerotomies based on the combination or not. But I usually have a low threshold for suturing the sclerotomies overall.
You know, and you guys, feel free to comment, especially if I'm having a fellow do the, I always try to make, do the rexus. I always try to make the rexus a little bit smaller. I mean, you ideally want it smaller in the optic, but I'm always concerned if the rexus is a little too large with the one-piece lens that the optic could pop off with poor positioning. It shouldn't really happen if the bag is intact, but sometimes if, with poor positioning and pushing from a tamponade, I'm concerned about that. So I like to reduce negative pressure. I agree. I like to leave that 10-0 nylon from an infection, and I just don't want the AC shallowing. And then in terms of the sclerotomies, these are the rare cases. I tend to use air, at least a partial fill, like you mentioned, Dave, in most of my cases. But if I've done a cataract surgery, that's the situation where I might use fluid and suture. And I've gone back and forth on that. I haven't really seen big differences. But sometimes I use fluid because I don't want that air tamponade on the lens in case it pops out if I'm concerned about the rexus. And then if I leave fluid, I usually am more inclined to suture because I'm just a little more concerned. I know the data is controversial, but there is some older data suggesting that fluid, unsutured fluid filled eye sclerotomies may pose a higher risk for infection than, example, than air filled eye. But again, it's interesting to hear kind of the variety here and the variability. Let's talk about some special situations. And then we'll talk about post-op care because I think it is a little different for these cases. So let's say it's an oil patient, right? And this is something we've referenced before, Ajay, but let's say the patient has oil and a cataract in the eye. Well, let's say they have oil and they have no cataract in the eye. Ajay, are there situations where you have a phakic patient with oil where you will not remove the lens and you'll just take the oil out?
Yeah, I've done that before. It all depends on what I think is the status of the retina in terms of my plan going in. And so if I'm especially worried about the retina, like I've had some patients who've just had really bad recurrent PVR, even after oil removal, they look really good. And so I tend to like leaving a gas tamponade at the end of the surgery, even if everything looks good, just to hedge my bets to make sure that if PVR recurs, at least I have something in the eye to help with keeping the macula on. For a little while longer. So in those cases, when I'm planning to use a gas tamponade, I tend to not like to do the IOL surgery at the same time, basically for everything that we talked about before with just concern about the IOL moving with the gas dripping on it. And I do think that these patients who tend to get this recurrent PVR oftentimes have just a little bit of a higher inflammatory state during that post-operative period. And so I am concerned that they're the ones who are more likely to develop the synecdoche eye.
Right.
And so I prefer to leave those patients fake it.
You leave them fake it. But let's say they do have a cataract and you do have to take the oil out. What's your order of operations, Dave? You may be similar to me because we train in the same place, but you typically do the phaco and then take the oil out or vice versa?
Yeah, I would do the phaco first.
Ajay?
I usually take the oil out first and then do the phaco.
All right. Time to fight. Ajay, why do you take the oil out first?
I've had one case where the oil comes around the intact zonules, and it made everything else much more difficult. And so ever since then, I've always taken the oil out first. You sort of have a different problem to deal with. You have a hyper deep chamber essentially that you're working with, but it was still way better than the oil coming forward. I don't know if you guys have ever had the oil come forward in your cases when you do the FACO first.
Yeah, I think that the pro cons, if the oil comes forward, that's a little annoying and the eye tends to get a little softer. I just don't, again, part of this is comfort. I think there's a wrong way to do it. People do it both ways. But I think that, and Dave can comment on why he does it. I don't love that hyper deep chamber. And it's a problem that's going to keep getting worse and worse and worse as you keep going. And you feel like you're operating in a pit at some point. And the bag tends to be a little more floppy too. I feel like the oil, even though there's more posterior pressure, tends to stabilize the bag a little bit so it's not flopping as much when you get to the end of the FACO. But Dave, I'll let you comment since you were doing a lot more of these FACO bits.
Jay, I agree with you 100%. I think that little bit of posterior pressure is kind of a double-edged sword. Like you're saying, it's kind of supporting that bag there for you. But if you think, you know, you have a tight oil fill, or particularly if you're putting a block in that eye, then you'd worry about, you know, that the Rex is running on you from posterior pushing. But I still, you know, typically do a FACO first, unless, you know, it feels like a really firm eye and I don't feel like I can equalize pressure with enough viscoat or Helon in the AC to potentially prevent a run.
Yeah, so let's talk about now post-op care. Ajay referenced post-op inflammation. And Dave, I'd like you to comment, because again, you're doing more of these FACO bits. I feel like your care post-op has to be different than our traditional, you know, here's your antibiotic steroid and then you taper 4-3-2-1 over 4 weeks, especially if you're doing a FACO bit. And we'll talk about different indications, but I'll say diabetic FACO bit is a good example. But any of these, I feel like the inflammatory response tends to be more with the combined surgery. And maybe that's why that study found more post-operative synechiae when you do them combined. What do you do in terms of your post-op drops? Do you give them any injections at the time of surgery? What do you do post-op with surgery? And do you use any topical NSAIDs routinely for these cases?
So I don't. At the end of the case, I'll inject subconj Kefzal Dex, and then post-op, I'll do Pretfort QID for a month, and then Vigamox QID for a week. And I won't put atropine at the end of the case. If it's a combo, I don't do any atropine.
Ajay, how about you?
I have a pretty similar approach to prednisone. I pretty much base on the amount of corneal edema, but similar for antibiotics and the duration for the taper for the prednisone.
So again, this is all non-scientific, just us kind of discussing our practice patterns. But what I do is a little different. I've started for my FACO bits, especially if they're diabetic, I usually give them a subtenons steroid, like a Kenalog, at the time of the procedure, because I'm concerned about this inflammation. And in diabetics, I think it's a little more important because they do tend to have a little more of an abnormal blood aqueous barrier. And then for the drops, this is a situation, some people always routinely split their drops, and I don't, I use a combo antibiotic steroid for most of my surgeries, but for my combined, that's when I'll separate and do a prednisolone and an antibiotic separately. One, because the prednisolone gives you a little more kick than the dex you'll get in the drop. And two, I like to taper that a little more slower separately. I don't use a topical NSAID day like you talked about routinely, but I do use the subtenons to bridge against CME, just because I am concerned about that. But I think synechiae is a real issue. I think that when I first started doing these, I think that you don't realize how much inflammation there is. And the next time is someone comes in and they have synechiae, and that's always a bummer. Though a lot of times it's not visually significant.
Correct. Yeah, I agree. You can YAG it very easily if you're having to YAG for PCO down the road too. Just make sure you offset to zero offset.
So you led into one of my last questions, which is, do you guys routinely open the capsule in these cases, assuming that you're, whether or not you use a tamponade, thinking, well, if I'm already here, I don't want them to need a YAG later, do you open a capsulotomy? Ajay?
I don't, unless it's obstructing my view during surgery.
How about you, Dave?
So in a standard like ERM, combo ERM or combo MAC hole, I typically will. I'll just do a little central bite at the back. And my reasoning there is you're in there. I think it's relatively safe. I haven't seen any complications from it yet. And, you know, and the worst thing I would think of doing down the road is say you have to do a YAG for PCO and then you've given them, you know, essentially a new floater after their vit, they might be unhappy with you.
Yeah, it's interesting. I agree with you. I think if it's routine and you're not going to be going to air for a long period of time, I think it's nice to save them the YAG. But I definitely, I remember as a fellow thinking I was doing them a huge service for, and it was some case where I needed to do some work under air. And I totally, you know, put myself in a difficult situation because then the IOL started fogging as soon in the area where I'd opened the capsule. And then I couldn't undo it at that point. And it made just a very simple procedure a little more complicated and unwieldy. So I agree. I think it's case by case. It's nice to think about opening it.
Right.
But it just depends on what you have to do after that.
I wouldn't do that for a combo for an RD. I would leave the capsule intact for exactly that reason, what you said. You don't want to fight with fogging.
So let's go back to the root of how this whole episode came together, which was Dave Eamon and I had a conversation about buckle bits versus phaco bits. And Dave said he doesn't really place as many buckles at the time as vitrectomy since he started doing phaco vitrectomy. We'll bring in the rational judge, Ajay, who knows all about PVR and redetachments. Do you think that doing a phaco vit, because now you're turning the vit into a pseudo-phaco vit, and we always talk about the issues maybe with phakic fits, maybe worse outcomes, debatable, but there is some data. Do you think that levels the playing field where maybe the buckles become less necessary, Ajay?
I think certainly for a subset of patients, it would potentially eliminate the need for a buckle. Certainly if the patient has a lot of peripheral pathology, I think that there might still be a role for the buckle if there's like a ton of lattice or something like that. But in terms of visualization and access, I think you would overcome those deficits when you're doing a phakic vit compared to a pseudophakic vit.
Yeah, and Dave, I'll let you comment in a sec. I think that when I sat down and thought about what you told me, it made sense that maybe you wouldn't need the buckle. Dave, are there any situations where you would do a phaco vit and place a buckle at the same time? Sounds crazy and radical, but would you ever do that? And if you did, what would you do with your IOL calcs?
Well, Jay, it's not that crazy. We call that a super combo, and we do that quite often. So, for example, if we have a PVR, like a phakic PVR RD, typically that's exactly what we'll sign them up for, a phaco, buckle, vit. Some guys do the buckle first, then the phaco, then the vit. I do the phaco, then the buckle, then the vit. And the only difference here is you aim a little hyperopic to account for your buckling effect, your myopic shift from the buckle. But yeah, we do that quite often.
What's your aim typically? How much do you account for?
So that's a great question. I typically go plus 0.5 to plus 1.
So mild.
Obviously, it depends on how high you're going to put your buckle. And this is actually one of the questions that some of my partners were chatting about, and we're looking at investigating that a little further.
So Ajay, we've talked about this before. We've both done a couple of super combos in certain scenarios. And we've also talked about the timing, and Dave outlined he likes to do the phaco first. I've thought about it, and I usually do the phaco first too, because I figure that's my best cornea at the time. And then I suture the wound and then do the buckle after, so I'm not torquing, you know, the eye. At least I have the wound closed. I mean, do you do the same thing, or do you ever switch it up and do the buckle first?
So I like putting in my ports before I do the phaco, and so I open up the con, and then I'll put in the ports, I'll do my phaco, and then I'll put the buckle on after that.
Okay. Well, Ajay, you have Dave Eamon, Canadian phaco vitrectomy surgeon on the line. I've been asking all the questions. Do you have any additional questions to ask him, to probe him, devil's advocate questions? Anything you want to know?
I was hoping you could talk a little more about the YAG for the posterior synechia. So I've actually never done that before. Do you just use the same settings you're using for the capsulotomy and just aim it at the iris optic junction?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You aim right where you see that kind of broad band of pigment going to the anterior lens capsule. And the only thing you want to make sure is look at your offset. So typically for a YAG, PCO YAG capsulotomy, I'll do a max offset. So I avoid any lens pits. But if you are going to do, you know, synecholysis, you want to make sure you put that offset to zero. So basically where you aim is where you're going to disrupt that pigment. And it works beautifully. I'll typically put them on prednisone 4 times a day for about a week after that, because you do stir up some pigments and some inflammation in the AC, but it settles down very nicely.
Well, guys, I appreciate the time. Dave, I appreciate you taking the time to shed some light. And again, this is a difficult issue, I think, because of referral patterns in the U.S., but there are scenarios where we will do phaco vits, and things may change over time. Maybe we'll do more phaco vits over time as things change in ophthalmology. I can't let you guys go. Dave's a Raptors fan, so there's really nothing I can make fun of him for. Ajay, this may be dated by the time this podcast comes out. The Knicks traded their franchise player last week for cap space. You were despondent. Has the media spinning made you feel better about it? Are you excited about the prospect of cap space now?
It was like the stages of grief. I think now I'm at acceptance finally. But, you know, it's always tough trading a homegrown player that you drafted, that you really liked. I guess a lot of the stuff that's come out about Porzingis threatening to sign the qualifying offer and decimating his trade value by doing that certainly makes it feel a little better about what we got back. You know, we did get cap space. We did get draft picks, which I think is what makes me feel a lot better. Initially, when they were announcing the trade, they didn't talk about that. But, you know, I think it's a different league now where players definitely have a lot more of an active role in determining where they're going to go and maneuvering trades. And I think that he just didn't want to be in New York. And I can't fully blame him. He had a really bad team for a while. And so hopefully it'll work out for both teams. And we'll see where those draft picks end up.
Dave, Raptors, you're excited?
Yeah, we're the North.
Well,
I mean, Jay, I'm not gonna try to chat sports stats here. I mean, I got nothing compared to you guys, but you know, the Cavs have typically been our endpoint, and they don't seem to be a real threat this year. So I'm hoping they can go a little deeper.
Perfect. Well, guys, I appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this late at night, and having a great night.
Thanks, Jay. Thanks for having me on. A lot of fun.
As always, you can find this episode and all prior episodes on our website, retinapodcast.com. That's RETINAPodcast.com. All 154 episodes, including this one, are sound there archived by category. You also find our blog, which has a new feature where two of our bright medical students, Mike Menenkasa and Amy Klusterboer, reflect on the latest episode and offer their perspective. You can sign up on the website for our mailing list. That will give you updates on the most recent episodes. There are also links to subscribe in the Apple Podcast Store as well as Android Store. You can like our Facebook page or find us in Apple Podcast Store or the Android Store as well. We're on Twitter at RetinaPodcast, and to contact us, click on the Contact Us link on our website or email us at retinapodcast@gmail.com. Feedback is important to produce episodes like this and give us ideas, and also tell us what we're doing well or we could do better. We appreciate all the people who have left reviews in the Apple Store, and please continue to leave your positive comments in the form of review if you have the time. Many thanks to Dr. Eamon and Dr. Kurian for joining me. Thanks to Dr. Louis Kai, Mike Menenkasa, and Angela Chang for producing a great episode. Finally, thank you listeners for what you do on a daily basis, the patient care you provide, the articles you read and publish, and the conversations you inspire here. This is Jay Schrader, signing off.
Feeling.
This is straight from the cutter's mouth.
Take care. Bye-bye.